welcome Hoosier fans to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 218th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 718th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of June 24th, 2021. I am your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Martin takes the shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment occurred last Friday when the Indiana Athletic Department announced that they would return to 100% capacity for all fall events and activities. While a simple and expected announcement, it is exciting to know for sure that as Indiana fans, we are back and we are back in the stands. The football team will be very exciting to watch this fall, and of course, the return of tailgating will help us all return to normal. Volleyball season tickets are on sale, and the other fall sports always appreciate loyal fan support. So it's time for Hoosier fans to enjoy what we lost for 18 months, but this is a basketball podcast. Yes, that also means we are closer to getting back inside Assembly Hall. We are closer to a home court advantage where we fans can help Coach Woodson and the guys get this program back to winning again. Indiana Athletics are back, and Indiana fans are back 100%. And for that, we are very excited. Okay, let me introduce my esteemed co-host for tonight. First to my left.
You'll have fun.
Fun. It's Andy Bottoms, fresh off of a trip to the beach. I don't have a coaching comparison for you, but what are your thoughts here as the summer progresses with Indiana basketball?
Yeah, we're finally, it took a while, but we finally settled into the relatively slow news portion of the offseason. It definitely, the excitement piece lasted a little bit longer than usual, but I feel like we've settled into the summer. So really, at this point, it's a lot of recruiting news and a lot of schedule news, and both of those are things we're going to talk about a little bit later. You know, I think the scheduling stuff, you and I, Coach, probably gravitate toward a little bit from a bracketology perspective. So that's the stuff that I've paid more attention to. News came out today about the Gavitt games that IU is going to host St. John's. I don't believe St. John's is picked all that high in the Big East for most things, but obviously some pieces still moving from a roster perspective. So I think a relatively favorable matchup for IU, not the least of which because it's at home. But starting to take shape, starting to get a little bit of a feel for what Woodson's trying to do from a scheduling standpoint in his first season, and we'll talk more about that. But certainly excited about the news that you talked about with the capacity, and excited for the football season, hoping that when the schedule comes out and the varying soccer schedules come out that I'm tied to, hopefully the stars will align and I'll be able to get over for a game. But we'll certainly be exciting for a season that holds a lot of promise on that end, and also on the basketball floor, as you talked about, being able to have fans in Assembly Hall again is going to be huge. Really excited. There's been so much excitement about this team, and to kind of be able to build on that by people actually being in the building is certainly exciting.
Thanks for bringing up the soccer program. They got a quick turnaround from their spring season. Their runner-up in the tournament. It'd be good to go out on a good fall nights to watch them in Bloomington as well. And to my right,
analyzing players, finding every wrinkle. He hasn't ever hosted, never lifted a finger. He's got all the
answers. Well, let me quickly add just one thing about this.
Dude just interrupted his own jingle.
It's the one, it's the only, the great Ryan Phillips. Your take on anything, Ryan?
Just anything? You sure you want to go there?
Just it's anything.
IU basketball.
That's a dangerous opening right there.
What I think has struck me the most this offseason so far, and that continued this week, is just the breadth of recruiting attention this staff is giving across the nation to different players. As in stark contrast to the last staff, which seemed to really target a small number of players and sort of push all its chips in on those guys and not really have backup plans. We have seen tons of players. I know they spent a year not being able to recruit guys on campus. So this is definitely going to be, you know, there was going to be a cascade of visitors as soon as the restrictions were lifted. But just to see how many guys are coming in and visiting the program, how many guys are taking the official visits, but more importantly, the unofficial visits to build that relationship on campus before you get them in for the official visits. Just this week, they had Xavier Booker from Cathedral in. They had Jalen Hooks from Crispix Attucks. They had Caleb Glenn out of Louisville in. There's a constant wave of guys on campus getting to know this coaching staff, seeing the campus, and guys who are excited to do so. And I think that's a huge sign for Indiana, because guess what? You know, when you're going for top players in the country, you're going to miss on some. So you've got to have ideas, you know, fallback ideas. And we saw Tom Crean, I think his staff would paper the country with more offers than Archie Miller's did. But you saw times where they didn't have a backup plan and had to throw scholarships at guys who did not deserve those scholarships. We're not on the level of Indiana basketball just to fill out the roster. We saw Archie Miller bank some scholarships because he missed out on certain guys. And I just think that this group has a better feel for what they're trying to do to fill out their roster. And if you look at the guys they're bringing in, you can tell what kind of players they want. And there seems to be a consistent pattern of the guys they want on campus. And guess what? They're not going to get them all. They're going to miss guys. It just happens in college recruiting, especially when you're going after great talent, 4 to 5 star talent. You're going to miss on guys. But being able to miss on one guy and hit and have a backup plan you can hit on, at least to fill your roster out, at least to be, you may not get an all Big Ten guy, but you'll get a guy who can help you win down the road and win games for you. That is incredibly important. And the depth, as we've seen injuries over the last 5 years hit this Indiana program hard, having that depth is incredibly important. So you're not playing walk-ons and you're not, you know, looking for guys off the street to fill those scholarship roles. So it's been really interesting to watch how this group is operating. They are really hitting recruiting very hard in the offseason to get guys on campus and get them to see the campus and introduce themselves, tell them what they're all about, and introduce them to the team, their potential future teammates as well. All of that really important, and it's been really good to see.
We have a really good question in the third segment about how we judge that success in the next couple of recruiting classes or what Coach Woodson's going to be going to. So we'll come back to that later. But here's what we're going to be covering this week. Obviously, Hoosier headlines. And our main topic in segment two is going to be scheduling. We added a couple of games since our last show and the announcement today that St. John's will be coming to Bloomington for the Gavitt Gaines. And then, of course, in segment three, we'll answer your questions. All of that this week coming up on Assembly Call Radio. We don't have an advertisement for you today, but just a public service. Time to take care of each other. Again, I appreciate everyone who has been supportive of our family and the medical issues that we've been through. In every community, there are people who need help and need just a pat on the back or something else. If you can find some time, you know, a card, effort, something, let's just start keep taking care of each other. I think that makes everyone a lot better. So here we go. Let's hit the Hoosier headlines. We mentioned earlier the IU Athletics announced 100% capacity for the fall events. They do have some protocols for inside events that they will announce a little bit later. The news on the schedule, which we'll talk in the second segment, Marshall was added as a non-conference game. Louisiana Lafayette also with the games that were already announced. And then IU to host St. John's in the Gavitt Games on November 17th. Andy and I will probably talk a little bit about bracketology and what that means for Indiana. I think so far the selection of the non-conference teams has been a positive in that area, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. A couple hours ago, a tweet from Indiana basketball account said that Forbes magazine had Indiana basketball the number 3 most valuable college basketball team. And in an era where we've talked a lot about the name, image, and likeness, and then this week a Supreme Court decision came down about, you know, educational benefits can be paid. It was pretty narrow in its scope, but it's really going in the direction of moving amateurism to a new definition or getting rid of it. We're not going to talk a lot about that tonight, but probably throughout the summer we will talk about that. But if Indiana's Number three, that's some positive to hear. IU offers Xavier Booker, Ernest Uday Jr. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Those are both big men. Dennis Scott also received an offer, and Miles Colvin over the weekend received an offer from the Indiana Hoosiers. And Justin Taylor, who holds an offer, has IU in the final five, is to announce his choice on Saturday. There's a lot of discussion about he's going to stay out east, and those are the headlines for your Indiana Hoosiers this week. Ryan, anything there that you'd like to talk about those headlines?
Well, I think that obviously the 100% capacity is huge. I think that the schedule stuff you guys can really get into to talk about what kind of teams those are. I think it's cool they're playing St. John's. St. John's isn't what it used to be, but it's a pretty cool matchup. I like playing those teams that have had classic, you know, histories to them, and St. John's certainly is one of those classic Big East teams, you know, that there are all those stories about from the 70s and 80s. And obviously I touched on the recruiting stuff, but I want to know, obviously, I think, are you going to be just hitting Bloomington every weekend to make up for lost time?
Yeah. I went down this summer before all the stuff we had to do this summer and got a day in, but yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the tailgate stuff out. It's been a couple years, and I'm going to get volleyball tickets and probably soccer tickets. I don't know how many times I can make it down in the fall to support those programs, but I might
soccer's awesome, man.
Share those with some listeners or whatever that can get down there. But yeah, I'm excited about getting back to Bloomington and not having to worry about what's going on.
Well, I talked to my buddies in town right now, who I went to IU with, who is from Sandy. We moved out to IU together, and he got married during the pandemic, and his now wife moved from San Diego to Bloomington to Indiana, and they live in Indianapolis, and she's gotten to hang out in Bloomington precisely once, and it was at our meetup last year in February, or 2 years ago now in February. And she has not seen, like, gotten to do, and that was like one night, and she hasn't gotten to do anything in Bloomington. I'm just like, you guys need to, like, this needs to be a weekend. Every other weekend you need to be down there doing stuff.
Yeah.
So it'll be great for everybody.
It's going to be a lot of fun to get back to normal here in the fall. Andy, thoughts on the Hoosier headlines? Anything else you want to touch on?
Like you said, we'll get into this a little bit more. Just a couple, one thing with Marshall, they really play up tempo. So as we start thinking about IU and how they want to play, I don't know if the selection of opponents is trying to prepare for different styles of play or trying to find ones that might mirror how IU wants to play. But Marshall, I think I looked earlier on KenPom was 20th in tempo. Even Louisiana was up almost in the top 50 ranking wise. So I think you'll see some up and down games, maybe more exciting in that regard than, potentially some other, non-conference games that you would go through. And I think St. John's plays really fast as well. Mike Anderson, the coach there. So they're 10th. They got Posh Alexander, a really good guard. So I think, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, I think some good tests and at least some, IU's not picking St. John's to play, but they're playing some really up-tempo teams. It'll be interesting to see how, one, they defend that, and two, how they counteract that defensively. So yeah, interesting to see the schedule start to come together. Still a few pieces left, as we'll talk about after this, but at least starting to take shape, starting to get at least a feel for what the philosophy is for this season. I don't know that you can extrapolate that anymore into what the scheduling philosophy is going to be in the future. But I think you can start to see a little bit of what they're trying to accomplish with what they're doing this year.
Yeah. And I'm going to go back to the Forbes magazine rating. And I don't know what goes into it. I'd like to go read that article. I have not read that article yet about what criteria that went into. And I can't wait to see what the impact is going to be on recruiting. Obviously, people are going to need to see what Coach Woodson does offensively and defensively, and they're going to have to win. His conversations with recruits, I think, has been, for getting the guys back that he did and the transfers, I think he's been successful quite a bit. But to see if that helps, and with the Cuban Center and the things that are going on, I think that it speaks volumes for Indiana is positioned to make that an advantage. And then that advantage will help on the court when you get players in. That to me was a fascinating headline to just pop up in the Twitter feed. So we're going to talk here about scheduling coming up in section segment two. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here. At California's Great America, it's never too early to start thinking about next year's fun. That's why we're offering the lowest price of the year on a 2022 Gold Pass right now. That includes unlimited visits this year, so you can enjoy the Great Pumpkin Fest, Haunt, and Winterfest. Then unlimited visits next year to try new foods, enjoy festivals like Taste of Orleans, scream on our world-class coasters, and splash away at South Bay Shores Water Park, all for just $82 plus applicable taxes and fees. Hurry! Offer ends October 31st, so get your Gold Pass now at cagreatamerica.com. It's amazing in here.
Hi, this is AJ Moyer. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers!
Welcome back to Assembly Call Radio. How do you keep up with the fire hose of information that comes out almost every day about IU basketball? It's crazy during the off season, and it's even crazier during the season. Well, we've got your back. We send out a free weekly email newsletter on Sunday mornings. It rounds up the most important and interesting IU basketball stories from the previous week to keep you up to date on your Hoosiers. Over 8,000 of your fellow IU fans are on the list, and we want you to be on there too. So go to join.assembly.com to subscribe for free right now. That's joinassemblycall.com. You can also text IU to 66866. That's IU to 66866. Okay, I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms, and we're going to talk a little non-conference scheduling here, what we know and what we don't know, and maybe what we'd like to see either – the next season or down the road as far as non-conference scheduling. We know six out of the 11 possible non-conference games. The seventh is already determined will be a Big Ten ACC challenge, and we'll talk about who we'd like to see in that as well. So there's basically four left that we are unsure of at the time. What we do know is you have Notre Dame in Indianapolis at the Crossroads Classic and announced today in Bloomington. The Gavitt Games will be November 17th, early in the season, probably the second game, I would imagine, against St. John's from the Big East, which will be a nice matchup. We also have known through a variety of sources that Merrimack, Louisiana Lafayette, Northern Kentucky, and Marshall have been added and will be at Assembly Hall this season. So, Andy, just get your thoughts on the six that we know. Your thoughts on the schedule to this point.
We've talked about this at various points. I think we've either gotten questions or talked about it in the off season, just in terms of what we thought the approach would be to scheduling. I think many of you guys, I don't remember that I fell on this. I thought Woodson might be apt to really, try to go out and get a little bit more aggressive. I think they've done a reasonably good job of scheduling winnable games that won't hurt you from a metric standpoint. So for the most part, you're not going to be playing anybody that's in the low end of of Division One, and those are the games that really, really kind of hurt you. Now, you probably don't have a lot of games that you feel like you should lose either. And so I think they're striking an interesting balance there. You know, I mentioned the tempo stuff earlier. I think you've got a couple teams that are going to play really fast. Again, the St. John's was not by choice, but Louisiana Lafayette and Marshall were. So I think that, you know, may or may not be telling it all. But I think as you look down, you know, the list of those games, you've got teams that are, you know, should be pretty good. As you look through St. John's, at least I'm using Bart Torvik because I don't think any other site has kind of projected, you know, records and that kind of stuff. He has, I think, St. John's last in the Big East, which made it a little bit of an odd choice. But I also know the Gavitt games, not everybody's playing every year, so you've only got so many options. But I do think from a style of play standpoint, it'll be interesting. Like I mentioned before, they got Posh Alexander, who's a really good guard, was a freshman last year. They got Aaron Wheeler, that transferred from Purdue, always seemed to play well against IU. Montez Mathis, Rutgers transfer. So maybe they're just trying to, you know, kind of ease them in, get some other guys back. But Louisiana Lafayette has got some good transfers coming in and projects to be one of the better teams in the Sun Belt, which is usually a, you know, good mid-tier league. Because if you look even last year at some of the leagues that were in the middle on KenPom, you know, the Sun Belt where Louisiana's from was 21st. The Horizon where Northern Kentucky's from was 20th. They typically are one of the better teams in that league. You know, Conference USA that Marshall is in was 13th. I don't know that they necessarily project to be well, to be all that good, but I think they've got an interesting style. And Merrimack hasn't been in Division One very long, and they're in a not very good conference, but they're have already established themselves as a pretty good team within that league. So that's, you know, maybe the easiest game that you have there out of the ones that you've scheduled. And then, you know, you got Notre Dame, who I think will be a bit improved from a year ago. You know, Torvik tends to value continuity quite a bit, but he's got them, I think, fifth out of the teams in the ACC. That might be a little bit hopeful, but I think a solid team that'll, you know, anytime you're playing a major conference team, it's not gonna hurt you too much no matter what. So I think they've set up a lot of winnable games. I think some of those might be challenges. I don't think there's a true, you know, stretch game on there, if you will, yet. And maybe that's still to come as they look at other opportunities. But I think they've done a good job of not putting themselves in a place where the schedule is going to hurt them at the very least.
Yeah, I think looking at it from the bracketology, I like it. I think it's actually somewhat challenging. Northern Kentucky has made a run in the tournament a couple times and played in the NCAA tournament. Merrimack went to Northwestern and beat Northwestern. And I know we hope to be a lot better than Northwestern, but these are games where you're going to have to play well in order to win. If you play well, you're going to win 10 to 20 points, but they're going to be games where you're going to have to work for a while. And I think that's good for programs that move forward. And I think the bracketology aspect is if they're sitting in the 200 of the net, that's going to help the strength of schedule down the road. Whereas if you had just automatics in that 300 range or those, you know, directional schools from the real the conferences that are some of the weakest conferences. So I think this is good. And we still have four that are not known. And so from that aspect, I think it bodes well. I still think that in an 11 game non-conference schedule, you need to play five really tough opponents, and one of them needs to be on the road. Simply to get some chance to get some quality wins. You have the Crossroad, which is neutral, which will help your resume, but you need to play on the road before you get to the Big Ten. So I would like to, and we'll talk about the four games at the back of this segment, but I would really like to see the remaining four, only one more team that is an expected win, and get at least three tough teams in order to get ready for what is a grueling Big Ten schedule. Ryan.
Counterpoint, money. That's why you don't have a. I mean, after a year with no revenue, it's hard to see me. It's hard for me to see them willingly taking a road game. I agree. I think it does help prepare you. I think the most likely scenario is getting an ACC Big Ten game on the road for that schedule. But I think that given revenues,
I think IU's due for a home game in that though. I mean, I know it's not perfect in terms of alternating, but
yeah. And you know that they're going to give Duke a home game this year, so that might throw off the home road rotation off. I don't know what Duke did last year, but they're going to give Duke a home game in that one. I think something like Duke Michigan would be a good, you know, send off in that for Coach K. But I just think it's hard for me to see a lot of the big schools giving up a game check this year to go on the road. After last year and not having the revenue.
And that's a really good point. And then scheduling a Marshall, scheduling a Louisiana, scheduling a Northern Kentucky, which are teams and at least in the top half of those conferences.
Sure.
That'll be better test while you're making your money and resume builders for the tournament. So you brought
and I'd also say with those non-conference games, I agree. You don't want to just have no challenge wins, especially on a team that it is going to have a lot of new pieces that need to fit together and figure out their roles and rotations and everything. You need to play teams, not necessarily that can, I mean, anybody can beat you, but not necessarily who can beat who you look at and like, well, that could be a loss. You know, you should be winning all of these games, but you've got to play teams that can sort of challenge you because you're going to have to figure that stuff out and you don't want to just cruise into the Big Ten. You know, I mean, you need to face some at least solid opponents in the non-conference in this situation with all these guys that are new and that will be taking on new roles.
So you brought up the Big Ten ACC challenge, and what we're going to do here is we're going to go through and get your marquee matchups. What would be your favorite, maybe not best for IU, but it would be a great game to watch in this Big Ten ACC tournament. Then we'll come back and say, okay, this is a good game. Let's just go play it. And then there's one that's, man, that would be a boring Big Ten ACC tournament matchup. More from a fan perspective, maybe. Or you could, I guess you could go from, you know, what's best for the program perspective too. But Andy, what would be your marquee matchup, like the really best matchup for you for Indiana this year in the Big Ten ACC challenge?
I mean, I think you always, if you think marquee matchup, are probably thinking a Duke North Carolina type scenario. So maybe it's Carolina.
Not lately, first year. Andy.
Well, I just mean in general. Like if you're thinking like big names,
the brand
schools,
name.
Like, do you know Carolina with both historically good programs, new coaches, first time college coaches, that might be interesting. Even a Louisville, I don't necessarily know how they're supposed to be. I don't think I've seen them show up in too many of the early top 25 lists, but I think Carolina typically is around, you know, mid teens or in the 20s. So it gives you a good opportunity to pick up a good win. So I'd kind of go with them, I guess, for the marquee one. I don't necessarily, I don't know that I'd relish playing Duke all that much. I'll say Carolina, just as somebody that's been, I think, a few years since they played them, but I think them or Louisville would be interesting. Louisville, obviously, more geographically, and you know some of the games that they've played with them in the past.
Louisville, like we all want the Indiana Kentucky rivalry back, and we can add that here coming up. But the Louisville rivalry isn't bad either, and I'd like to see that maybe if we can't get to Kentucky. Ryan, you're the best matchup for you. If you could draw it up to that you wanted to watch.
I have Carolina, and but for a different reason than Andy. I think the marquee matchup thing is, I'm just teasing about them not being great. You put North Carolina and Indiana on a court together, and it'll be fun. Indiana has played Carolina a lot in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, I think more than anybody. I'm not – that's just off of recall. They played Duke a lot too, but – it's because of the brand. But I would also say another interesting aspect of that game is two first-year coaches who went to their schools and who are African-American at these schools. I think that's an interesting storyline for ESPN or whoever to explore. Whether you think that matters or not, I think it's an interesting parallel of what's going on at both schools and the story moving forward for both schools is two guys went to the school, have come back, have extensive histories at that school, kind of harken back to another era because of when they played and all of that stuff, and are now taking the mantle of these programs. And they're two of the, I think, like 17 or 15 major conference African-American head coaches, something like that. That's an interesting storyline. And I think that is an interesting storyline to play with if you're ESPN or the conference is making this decision.
So my marquee matchup is totally in-house because I wanted to make sure that that Jared come back and hosted at least one post-game show in the future. And if we play Virginia, his second love of a basketball team, he would be twisted in that post-game conference from complimenting the Bennett system. If Virginia win and crying, you know, if IU lost, it would be a theater. On a serious, I think that's just someone Indiana hasn't played while, and it's a top tier.
It's interesting whenever you play somebody new.
Yeah, like, somebody new, and then it's the pro program that you think Woodson is starting to bring in with his coverages defensively and his offense versus the back line, which we would like to beat.
Yeah, a lot Klein, of the fans back line like revenge game.
Yeah, kind of an inside the defensive theory revenge game. But we've played Duke a lot. We've played Carolina a lot, and recently Florida State back to back, and they've been a top team in there. So that to me leaves Virginia and Louisville as possibilities. But Virginia's a top program if you're talking marquee program and someone we haven't played. But, boy, you guys brought up some really good points about
I would say I one more thing I want to comment, since it is – I mean, Coach K is going to be a huge story in college basketball this year. It's his last season. Whether we like it or not, he's going to be an enormous story. Is Michigan State and Tom Izzo at Duke the best matchup they can come up with, do you think? I personally think that's what they're going to do.
Michigan?
Yeah, like Michigan. So on court, I love the Michigan matchup, but the story, it's always about a storyline.
Right, and Izzo and K.
I think Izzo and Coach K at Cameron for the last time is kind of the way they have to go, right?
But I don't know. Who plays who in the Champions Classic this year? That would be the only. I don't know if those two would be scheduled to play one another.
Yeah.
I don't know either. But
that's true.
I just think
that would be a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go, somebody put this in the chat, Maryland for old times in the ACC.
Oh, that's a good one too.
I say
that would be good, but that would be better if he had to go to Maryland and everyone was just mercilessly.
I say
that's not going to happen. So yeah.
Send Purdue down there. It's the last ACC Big Ten challenge. It's another home game for Duke. They've been playing.
I think it's going to be Purdue and Virginia. For some reason, I get that feeling. I don't know why, but I get that feeling, Purdue and Virginia.
And they played at Purdue a while back. So those are our marquee matchups. And so now let's pick an ACC team that's, it's not a great matchup. It doesn't excite you a whole lot, but okay, it's not bad. Let's go play. Ryan, we'll start with you.
Syracuse, because I want to find out if Mike Woodson can coach against his own.
Oh, man, you're killing me with Syracuse.
I would say Syracuse
or Louisville.
I just
can't stand playing Syracuse.
I would say Syracuse or Louisville for this category are the two picks, I think. Although, I think Louisville's a little more exciting just because of the local rivalry. But I would say Syracuse because I want the challenge of that.
For me, it's Clemson. Brad Brunell is an Evansville guy.
Again, they were good last year.
With the Woodson being from Indiana, they were good. You know, it's not that great matchup where you're excited, but they're a program that has been good. And, you know, it's going to fit that 5-7 in the ACC kind of ranking where Indiana is. So that's where Indiana is. Let's go play them. Andy, you're just okay matchup in the challenge.
I'll say Virginia Tech. They are – I like the way they play. There should be, again, most of these preseason things are ranked around 25th. So if you beat them, gives you a reasonable bump from and good from a tournament perspective. So I kind of like them. The coach's name is escaping me at the moment, so I'll look it up here while I'm talking. But he's done Mike Young. He's done a good job since taking over. They were pretty solid last year. They're definitely slower from a tempo standpoint than some of the other teams that IU's playing. But they tend to play small, which might be interesting matchup from an IU perspective. So I think it's a team you could get some benefit out of beating. Maybe a little bit under the radar in terms of how good they actually are, but it would be a decent matchup, I think.
And then our last matchup here would be the boring matchup, one that isn't just too pleasant to watch and really doesn't do much, I think, for Indiana moving forward to try to make the tournament. For me, it's Boston College. They're at the bottom of the ACC. I like wins, and I think we need to win, but you also need to get better. And I think the Big Ten ACC challenge, whether at home or on the road, is a chance to get ready for that tough Big Ten schedule. So I would be kind of bored with a matchup with Boston College. Ryan?
I've got there's three options here, I think, and it's Boston College, as you noted, Wake Forest, and Pitt. Pitt's interesting because we have two former Pitt players on our team now. But I think Boston College is the right answer. They're just terrible, and they've been terrible. And so I just don't think that's an exciting matchup at all.
Andy?
Yeah, Wake was the other one I was going to say. I think Boston College is the epitome of boring when you start talking about ACC teams. But otherwise, you'd probably normally throw Pitt in there. But with the Xavier Johnson in particular, with that factor, I think that would probably give that game a little bit of juice. So I'd say Wake would be the other one to throw into that. And I don't think either one of those is likely. They seem to typically try to match up roughly with what they project the leagues to be. So shouldn't have to worry about that.
Let's hope we don't get to that boring. So that leaves four remaining games in the non-conference. So the questions will be to you, and we can just go back and forth, and that is how many competitive games, meaning against Power 5 schools or bigger schools, should IU schedule out of those four? They already have three scheduled, similar to that from the Gavitt games and the Crossroads and so forth. And if you have a bye game or two in there, is there a team or a league that you would like to see Indiana bring in that would be a bye game? And then also at some point in this conversation, what's your dream matchup for a home and home with a real strong program that you'd like to see? Kentucky, obviously, we're going to throw that out there. Everyone will want to see Kentucky. But beyond Kentucky that we would like to see on a regular basis. Andy, we'll just start with you. You can go answer all of those or wherever you want to go with the four remaining non-conference games.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of competitiveness, I think you'd want to get at least a couple more good ones, because really at this point you're going to have St. John's, who I don't think you expect to be all that good, Notre Dame, who should be solid, and presumably whoever you play from the ACC is going to be decent in that. So I think you need at least two of them need to be Power 5 schools. I tend to fall in line with you that I'd love to see them find a way to get a road game, whether that's against a Power 5 school or not. I don't really know, but to go through the whole non-conference and not play a true road game never feels great. Certainly we know from a bracketology perspective sometimes that can come back to bite you, and so I think that would be good. So I'd say at least two should fall in the competitive range, probably one of those on the road. In terms of, you know, bye game teams to schedule, you know, I look at it more from a league perspective. So can you get a team out of the MAC, Missouri Valley, maybe the SoCon, somebody like that, that you think is going to be pretty good? Again, kind of fall in line well with some of the teams I've scheduled before from decent leagues, should still be able to win, but it'll give you a little bit of a test. And again, maybe it's trying to find different styles of play or things like that that would be within that. And then in terms of, you know, a dream matchup or whatever, I think I've said this before, I'd like to see him play Xavier or Cincinnati because it'd make it easy for me to try to go. I think those are typically pretty good programs. Cincinnati's gone through a lot of turnover. Well, what are you gonna do? So Cincinnati's gone through a lot of turnover and turmoil. You got Mike Roberts there. I don't know that that's one that's imminent that you'd put on there. Although I don't think there's hard feeling from him in listening to his interview with AJ Guyton, but that would be interesting. Xavier, you've got now the Jerome Hunter component of that. Again, maybe that's not one that you do for some of those reasons, but just in general, traditionally good programs, just regional relevance to it, and trying to do that. Not even, you know, even going back to the Louisville thing, I think that'd be another series to get back on the books. It's, you know, even Kansas, some of those things. I actually just reread Season on the Brink over our time at the beach, and just some of the going through the schedules of that, where they were playing Louisville every year, and some of those things were just consistent games. They had that stretch where they played Kansas a lot. I think those kinds of games would be interesting, and maybe something that's down the road. I think you're probably going to be hard pressed to get that for this year, but you would like to see some of those kinds of things come back if they can make it work.
Ryan, your thoughts on the remaining four games in the non-conference?
I mean, the remaining four games, I'm not sure. You guys are way better with the schedule than I am. You know what would fit, what wouldn't. I like to see mid-major teams come in, so you're not, you know, doing small conference teams. I like to see a couple of, you know, like MAC level teams come in and Missouri Valley, you know, stuff like that, come in and face them. So you're facing like teams from a good conference that will play good teams and have a chance to up their profile as well. As far as the game that I would really like to see, what about going out to California, doing UCLA home and home? I mean, you know, you can do like Louisville would be great. Kansas would be amazing, things like that. But find another classic program in another region of the country and showcase yourself out there. You know, do something like that where you could. Plus, it's another way for me to root against UCLA. I think it's great. But you're facing another program with a long, rich history that, again, was pretty good this year. Made that huge run in the NCAA tournament. I would say Gonzaga, but quite frankly, I don't want to play Gonzaga right now with the way they are.
For a few years.
But, you know, it's going to a different area that Indiana doesn't usually go to and facing a team and showcase yourself out there. It's good for recruiting, but it's also good for, you know, your profile that you're willing to travel to different parts of the country to play a game. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
Plus, the guys might get the guy, make it a weekend, let the guys have a couple days in LA, you know?
Exactly. I'm with Andy. I think there needs to be two more Power 5 competitive games. That would be five on their schedule. I think that gives you opportunities for good wins, for resume building, for the NCAA tournament. For me, the buy-in games, why can't – I know we've struggled. We lost to Indiana State in the first year of Archie Miller, and IPFW has gotten us under cream and all that. But those are the games I think you need to play, the Evansvilles, the Indiana States, the Valpos, the IUPUIs. If you got an extra game and they fit, you know, if you want styles of basketball and get prepared for the Big Ten, all that. But some of those local Ball State rivalries, if you're going to add a bye game, I think those also help you down the stretch. And that's something that gives a little local flavor to the non-conference as opposed. And then Andy, I think you said Southern Conference, Mercer's in there, Lipscomb. Boy, those are tough teams that are always tough in the tournament that you worry about in the NCAA tournament as an upset bid. But again, when Indiana, as soon as Indiana gets to a point where they're the top dog, you're not afraid of those teams. Those are the teams that you bring in. The dream matchup for me is UCLA. I look back to what happened in the 70s and some of that. UCLA, the other one that hasn't been played, Kansas and Louisville I have no problem with. I'd love to see us get back to that, but UCLA is the one. Go play at Pauley Pavilion. Come to Bloomington. Just would be great to see that blue uniform in Assembly Hall. The crowd would go nuts. I'd also like to play at the Palestra. So I would love to see Indiana at the Palestra. I would pay anything to go out there and see that. If it's got to be one of the five Philly schools, or Villanova would be ideal. But they might want to play that in a bigger arena, obviously for a gate, but, could you play a LaSalle? Could you play someone on the road in the Palestra? I just like those old venues, and there might be some other ones too, that if down the road you're looking for,
is that
non-conference.
That's Penn's home arena, right?
Correct.
University of Pennsylvania. Okay.
But I think
I know that they all can play.
Can play there, right?
Will play there. Yeah. No, but I was. Yeah. I wasn't. I couldn't remember which school it was actually their home arena. It's Penn. Yeah.
So, and then last question in this segment: do you guys like Indiana being in an additional tournament? I know the whole Crossroads, getting out of the Crossroads. Let's not get into that necessarily, but there is room still if it doesn't match up on the date of the Crossroads, to maybe get into some of these, you know, classics where you just, there's a doubleheader or something. Do you envision Indiana getting into that this year, playing one opponent at Barclays or something like that? Do you think that might happen this year?
I like actual tournaments, not that, you know, it's the coaches, whatever classic, and it's just one game. I want to go play tournaments.
Right.
And I, that's why I think the Maui Invitational is great. You get three games. You're guaranteed three games. The competition's usually good. You learn a lot about yourself, and you get to go to a locale, bonds the team. If you got to go to the Atlantis, or you got to go to, you know, Puerto Rico or Alaska, or it used to be Alaska was one of them. If you got to go, I like going to a location, being isolated, and developing a team early in the season where the repercussions of a loss will not reverberate the way they will with a conference loss. I think that that's one of the reasons that the Maui Invitational is very laid back when you're out there. If you listen to the, not only are they in paradise, but they realize like we're playing good teams. And if we lose one, you know, maybe it's a chance to learn more than if we win one, and it's not going to haunt you at the end of the season. I like the idea of doing those tournaments. Now, look, if you get in the big ones that, you know, what are the ones that, what's, you just mentioned one, Coach. The
Champions Classic or
the Champions Classic. You go to the Champions Classic, I mean, that's huge exposure for you. That you'll take all the time. Coaches versus Cancer, that stuff. Like, you get huge exposure, you play at Madison Square Garden. Okay, that's the big deal, and you should take that. But I like the idea of actually doing a tournament. And Indiana shies away from that, obviously, because it wants the home dates and right. It wants the revenue. I think that one of those a year is a great thing for this university, even if it means giving up the Champions Classic, because I think you learn way more about yourself in those tournaments. You've seen teams go to those tournaments, play terribly, and turn their seasons around and be really good. You've seen that a lot. And the reason why is because they learn lessons down there wherever they go, and then can import those lessons and turn the season around.
You know, you can get rid of the Crossroads Classic. I kind of like it because of the in-state feel, but you can schedule those guys. Indiana used to schedule Notre Dame and Butler.
Yeah, and then you can play them every other year anyway.
You can go play a Villanova. You can go play a Tennessee or some combination of four teams in a Thursday, Friday night semifinal, final situation. Andy, your thoughts on some of these, what, non-exempt type situations?
Yeah, you know, some of the bigger ones where you're getting the three games, I think they're scheduled out far enough in advance. You don't really have an option to do that now. But I do think some of the, you know, kind of two game ones like you talked about, where you get together with a few other major conference teams and play, you know, essentially a semifinal and a final where, again, you're not getting games that are going to hurt you. It gives you some good exposure. And then there is always some like kind of weird standalone games that have some sponsorship that you don't really know why it's there. But, you know, it's just two teams kind of randomly playing on a neutral site. I mean, you could do some of that, but yeah, I don't know whether they'll do that this year. I mean, it seems like I think they've changed the rules on some of that stuff a little bit because most teams play in some form or fashion of a non-exempt tournament. But I don't know. It'd be a good way to knock out a couple of the other more competitive games, and then maybe you do, you know, you get those other couple bye games at home and figure it out that way. So I'd like to see them do that. I think that I've even seen some movement in some of these teams. I don't know if coming out of COVID that some of the teams that had signed up for these, it seems like some of that's still pretty fluid in terms of who's playing what. I forget which one it was, but I feel like they've had some teams already replace
Purdue's others in those. Tennessee, so maybe, I think. Right.
Yeah, and I feel like that's one they weren't in initially and they replaced somebody else. That's exactly the one I was thinking of. So, you know, maybe there's some flexibility of things that open up and you get a chance to get into one of those, you know, four team deals if you can. But yeah, I think it would be worth it. Give yourself a chance to, you know, tournament like feel, turn around quickly, play another good opponent, stuff like that. I just don't know how, you know, scheduling this year is going to be different. Right. You know, maybe not as crazy as last year, but I do think you've got a little bit more flexibility than you might normally have where a lot of those things are set up further in advance.
Yeah, I also think that if you were going to continue the Crossroads Classic, stop making it just one game. Make it two games. Let the winners play each other. Like, I mean, you know, I think that there's more that you can do with that to make it more valuable to the teams that are playing it. Yeah, it's great. You get to play a team from in-state that you didn't play last year, but you played the year before. You know, it does get repetitive. So let the matchups actually happen. But then again, you know, then you might have Purdue and Indiana playing on a neutral floor in November or December, and the Big Ten doesn't want that. So you run into issues. I just think it's more valuable to get a couple games in a tournament-like setting for the team early in the year.
I agree, and I just think you got to play enough tough teams to avoid, you know, if it's a tiebreaker for a seed line or for selection into the tournament, your strength of schedule isn't, you know, nine home games because you needed the gate, but they weren't very good opponents. So that'll do it for our non-conference. Hopefully we'll get some reports on that here in the next few weeks and see how accurate we were. Coming up in our third segment, we'll do some subscriber shout-outs and then answer your non-basketball questions or your basketball questions. Plus, I don't think we have a mediocre question this week from Jay. If we do, we'll answer it. But stick around regardless with us here on The Assembly Call.
We know a three-digit number doesn't tell your story. That's why every Progressive Leasing approval is no credit needed. Shop your favorite stores with Progressive Leasing to get what you need, such as furniture, laptops, headphones, jewelry, mobile phones, appliances, mattresses, and more. Progressive Leasing obtains information from credit bureaus. Not all applicants are approved. Progressive Leasing offers lease-to-own purchase options, acquiring ownership by leasing costs more than the retailer's cash price. Visit progleasing.com to get started today.
This is Nick Zeisloft. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm the coach, Brian Tonsoni, here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms, and it's segment three, which can mean only one thing. Our first subscriber shout-out comes from the home of Calbert Chaney and Christian Lander, Evansville, Indiana. It's R.C. Lehman, a.k.a. R.C. the MC. R.C. had a hard time determining his favorite Hoosiers. He settled on a tie. Quote, in my lifetime, Dane Fife and Vic. Vic's progression was just pure fun, and Dane's run, well, you know, I was 12 and literally cried when they lost to Maryland. My sister and her friends made fun of me the next school day at school. End of quote. His assembly call leader is Coach. We've communicated a lot, planned on doing a music video together, and I still fully intend for that to happen. End quote. He is just a fun guy. We're talking about doing some Indiana basketball and some educational stuff through music videos, as he is a musician as well as an educator. And a special acknowledgement goes back to us. Quote, I want to thank you guys for providing us fans with objective entertainment. You guys have the conversations that I annoy my fiance with. I appreciate all the emergency episodes and the optimism despite all of the negative results. Much love and respect. Thank you, RC. Our second subscriber shout-out comes from the home of Race Thompson. That's Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's Seth Zarate. Seth, I hope I pronounced that correctly. His favorite Hoosier is Yogi Ferrell. For his assembly call leader, he chose Ryan, but with an important caveat. Quote, only when Jared is on to argue slash banter with him. Otherwise, it's Jared, end quote. And for his special acknowledgement, Seth said, quote, you guys rock. Also, my last name rhymes with karate, I guess. So just in case there's any question on pronunciation, I should read the script. So that is Zach, Seth Zarate. Thanks, Seth, for following us. We appreciate it. Okay, now it's time for the rest of our mailbag. All questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. Jay did not submit a question, but Jay did put out a tweet. We're going to a comedy club here in July 6th. His wife and my wife and my son and niece, we're going to go out to dinner and go see a comedian. So I appreciate Jay. That was not a mediocre effort in announcing this comedian coming to Indianapolis. So thanks, Jay, for that. Phil says, I remember a guy who used to host a community in AC Radio. Whatever happened to him? Jared is being a great father. That's what I'm going to say.
he decided to have a second kid. It's really not that complicated.
That stuff happens.
Why he did that, I don't know. As a childless man myself, I don't understand his decision making. But they're very happy, so it's.
Yeah, so he will be around, and he's behind the scenes and helps everything get going. But
we hear from Jared. By the way, in case people want, we hear from Jared like every day.
Yeah,
so it's not like he's disappeared. He's just not on the show.
And our next question is from Bob. Will there be an assembly call meetup this season? You guys are the ones from out of town. You heading into town?
Yeah, that's just called a Saturday for Coach.
Yeah, it's, I mean.
I would very much like to come into town. I'd like to come into town multiple times this year, but I think we definitely need to do one this year. And that's my, I don't know about you, Andy. You're the second.
I don't know if Ryan just froze for me or for everyone.
They got that good smile frozen there. Okay.
Oh, back. Did I pause? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I would think we'd certainly like to, but we'll see when the schedule comes out. That's always the tricky part, is figuring out when the schedule comes out, when you got a good, you know, weekend Big Ten game, and from a travel perspective. So I think our goal would certainly be to have one.
Yeah, hopefully a non-Friday game.
There will be an assembly call meetup during basketball season. There will be anyone who wants to come down and join fellow assembly call chat mobbers at tailgates. My tailgates are open to everyone. It's not all the guys can't be there every week, but you can come and have a beer or soda or whatever and talk a little Indiana football. Let me know. And Bob, you're more than welcome, as anyone is, to stop by the tailgate and have some food and have some fun. Next question, J.D. DeFries asks, how do we judge the success of the 2022 and 2023 recruiting classes? Is it a fit with the new system? Is it player ratings, position need, et cetera? He goes, I honestly have no idea, so would love some suggestions. Ryan, you talked recruiting in segment one. We'll throw it to you. What is your thought on how you judge a recruiting class?
Or should? Wins down the road. Yeah. I mean, really, you don't know. It's a crapshoot. Because here's the thing, and I've talked about this with rookies in sports, and it's the same thing with recruits, is you don't know how guys are going to act when they get on campus. You don't know how focused they're going to be, how dedicated they're going to be. You have an idea, certainly, of their personality. But, you know, a guy gets on campus and can decide basketball isn't the most important thing on campus. He may really like school. He may really like girls. He may like partying. Like, you don't know what guys are going to act like until they're on campus. So it takes a while to figure out how important a recruiting class is. Remember the movement? You know, everybody across the country was talking about what a great recruiting class and a game changer that was, and really didn't turn out to provide that much. And so I think that you really have to give it time to understand how good that recruiting. I mean, you do have guys that come on a campus and work harder than they did in high school and all that. And I think it's the same with in professional sports. You don't know how guys are going to act once they get paid. You don't know how hungry they're going to be once they get that first paycheck, and how hard are they going to work? Is it going to be like when they were scrapping and fighting, you know, every day to get to that point? So yeah, it takes a while. It's hard. I mean, you look at star rankings and you can say, all right, you know, this is a huge class, and then it can turn out to be bad. I mean, you know, nobody's had more high star ranking classes than Kentucky over the past 10 years. And a lot of those seasons have not ended where they were supposed to end. And you know, you look at another one was the Duke class with Zion Williamson. Didn't even make the Final Four, and they had by far the most talent in the country. It's so many factors go into it, how the pieces fit, how the guys play. Are they looking at the next level, or are they really worried about winning now? You know, I mean, what goes into it? So, yeah, you need a couple of years, I think, to really judge a class.
Andy?
Yeah, this one is tricky on so many levels, right? All the things that Ryan said, we don't have any idea what IU is going to play like. So you can't even if you read a scouting report of a guy, you wouldn't know whether he fits with the system very well or not. So I guess that's probably what spurred the question in the first place. But I think it'll be a little bit easier to gauge that once we watch the team play a little bit, and then you can figure out what kind of fit they would be. At least if you're looking at this ahead of time, hey, do I think this is a good class or not a good class? I think you'll have a little bit easier way to look at it that way. But yeah, I think Ryan said like that. I mean, by then you're, especially by the 2023 one, you're a few years into the at that point, you're a few years into the system. You're going to have a good idea whether things have been successful and whether the recruiting has been decent or not. And I think the other thing with some of this is there's going to be the potential for so much roster turnover with the portal and everything else. I don't know that even if the class itself doesn't grade out very well, it isn't necessarily a, you know, death sentence for what you're trying to do, because by then you're also going to have an idea of how well they've been able to, one, either keep guys that they want to keep, or two, utilize the portal to kind of bolster the roster as opposed to having to do it through recruiting and what recruiting even looks like at that point. So definitely a good question, but I think incredibly tough to answer based on all the unknowns about what the program is going to look like.
JD, I would say I'm going to say two things. One, don't get caught up in the number, like number 47 versus number 62, and just assume that if a different school got higher rankings, they're better. I think those are subjective and sometimes just don't pan out. So I'm not about player ratings as much. Your five stars obviously are better than any three stars, but that's all about potential. For me, once players commit and then sign, for me, I think before they play, if you're looking to try to judge, I would say position need. Did the coaching staff get players where they're going to need people to step in sooner than later? So if you get a couple big guys and you know you have a couple big guys graduating, that to me seems like the staff did a good job recruiting. It's always down to potential. Those kids may not end up playing very well. They might get over-recruited. But if you're graduating a four and a five and you get two big guys to come in, I think that's potentially a good recruiting class because it has the potential to fill needs. So that's kind of what I look like, because we really don't know for sure, for a lot of the reasons the guy said, until they get on campus and can handle all that, do they pan out? You know, don't want to harp on a negative, but like Demezi Anderson was known as a shooter, but when he came on campus, he just just really got a struggle to play and had to move to a different place. So that's I guess how I would answer.
Also, reputations lie, tape doesn't, quite frankly, with some guys. You know, if you see a guy with a high ranking, evaluators can get blown away by statistical, you know, like a guy, well, he dropped 35 the other day, so we got to move him up a little bit. You know, it's watch the guys play. You can tell who's good and who's not, and where they rank and where they should be. And I know these guys put out highlight films, whatever. Try and watch full game films if you can, right, or longer packages that independent places do that these high schools aren't releasing themselves. So you can get to see them miss shots too, you know, and you get to sort of learn their ins and outs of their game, because you will learn more from a failure than you will learn from a success on a guy. Was his form good when he missed that shot? You know, because then sometimes you just miss shots. But, you know, sort of break down what guys do and do not do well. That's the way you learn about them, not just the rankings or highlight film.
That's a really great point. Watch off the ball. You know, how do they play off
stuff
the ball?
Like that.
How is their positioning, defense? How do they guard the bounce? Those kinds of things help if you can find access to that. Elbows in. I'm going to say you have some really outstanding credit questions week in and week out. So we really appreciate that. Excluding TJD, Elbows In says, excluding TJD, project two players who will be your season MVP, one from the returning players and one from the new players that did not play last year. Andy, we'll throw it to you first. You need two MVPs that aren't TJD, one from returning and one from the new players.
A quick point of clarification. Does Parker Stewart count in the newcomers or the returnees?
New, okay. Because he has not played.
Wow. All right, I was just checking. I don't know that I was going to pick him for either one. Just wanted to make clear the parameters of what we were doing.
You just wanted to make it needlessly complicated.
Yeah, just wanted to buy myself a little time to think through. Returnees, then I guess I would say Race Thompson. I think if he's able to step out and shoot a bit, I think he already provides some toughness and rebounding and defensive prowess that they're going to need. The question mark there is, and this is something you guys talked about on the show, or coach that you talked about on the show last week, in terms of what guys need to work on, is how much is he able to play with TJD? Because if they can't figure out ways to keep both of them on the floor, then this ends up being a terrible pick. But otherwise, you know, your choices for that one are him, Finnessy, Galloway, Leal, Geronimo, Lander. So you got to figure out which of the freshmen becoming sophomores is going to play enough to do that. So I think Race, from a minute standpoint, would be the one on that front. And then of the new guys, I guess the temptation is to say Xavier Johnson, because he's probably going to be the guy that's got the ball in his hands the most and be creating for other players. So I'll go with him, although I'm really excited about Tamar Bates and have enjoyed some of the interviews that he's given, and think he's going to quickly ingratiate himself to the fan base. But I guess I'll go Xavier Johnson on that one.
Ryan, your picks.
Well, mine was going to be Race Thompson, because I think he's a heart and soul guy. I don't think it's going to be numbers. If you're judging MVP by who means the most to the team, I think even with TJD, it might be Race Thompson in some games. And because he's just the guy that does the little things that some guys don't. I think we've imported some guys who do those little things, but there were games Race Thompson last year didn't statistically do anything, as far as the big counting stats, but you felt like he was the most important player on the floor. And I will echo that for this year. I think that's going to be the case. I was kind of upset Andy picked him. I thought I was going to be really, really clever with doing that. As far as the new guy, again, I hate to agree with Andy every time, but I would say Xavier Johnson, just because it makes the point guard position more stabilized. But I'm going to go a little off the board here, and I'm counting Christian Lander as a new guy, because I think we're going to see a new Christian Lander. So I would say Christian Lander if we're going away from Xavier. Xavier Johnson's my pick. I'm kind of saying, but, you know, I think Christian Lander is going to be a different kind of player this year. And let's face it, he didn't play enough last year. If this were a professional sport, he'd still be considered a rookie because he wouldn't have gotten enough time to sort of separate himself as in his first year. So I think that Christian Lander is the guy that I think is going to be incredibly important to this team. I don't know why. I just have a feeling that he's going to be so important because of the way that Mike Woodson wants to play and because of the tempo Mike Woodson wants to play at. I think that he's going to be so important to this team.
That's a hell of a move, given how adamant you were that Parker Stewart can only be considered as a
I know.
I was trying to a new guy when his case as a returnee is
listen,
far
I was trying to put you inside
as a new guy.
I was trying to put you inside a box while I was going to step outside of it. So,
absolutely.
I'm going to go from this premise that IU's successful, finishes in the top five of the Big Ten, gets a win in the NCAA tournament. And who's going to be most valuable outside of TJD if that happens? I'm going to say Rob Phinisee because he's going to be a guy who could lock down a ball handler. And I think that mentally he has that idea to pick up these schemes that Coach Woodson's putting in, the switches, the triple switches that I assume are the ball screen stuff. You need defense. We all know that shooting is going to be the number one thing that helps us win, but you still need defense. And for a lot of the reasons you picked Race, both of you picked Race, I think getting Rob back. Now, if he's not back, that would blow up that pick. But I think he has the potential to really make an impact on the defensive end. And then my pick for the newcomers will be just the opposite. I'm going to go Parker Stewart because if there's one shooter that I think can really go off this year potentially – and this is just maybe from my hopeful thoughts, because I haven't seen him play, but if he can get near 40% and just be a knockdown three, I think he has the best opportunity to do that. I think then that just stretches the floor and lets X drive and TJD operate in the middle. And boy, then that gives us three dimensions that we haven't had in the past. So Parker Stewart for new for me. Rob Phinisee for the old, but really there's a lot of ways you can go and picking those. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that the new player part of that one, there's a lot of options for that. I mean, we didn't mention Miller Kopp at all. I think him in a role that allows him to be a complimentary player, if he's able to play some four, stretch things out, I think he could, get back to shooting the way he did a couple years ago. I think he could be that guy. I mentioned Bates briefly, but I think there's a lot of good things to like about him. So yeah, I thought that one was really difficult just because there's so many guys and you're trying to figure out what their role is really going to be. But I think if they embrace those roles, there's a lot of guys that could be really successful.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Last question, Jeff Marlowe, and I'm going to throw this right to you guys, because I don't know. Who are the panel's pick to win Euro 2020? Jeff Marlowe says his is Italy. I'm going to go Italy just because I'm Italian. I know France is pretty good. Germany's been pretty good. I don't know who has advanced to the round of 16. Any thoughts on the Euros?
Ryan, I'll let you go first. You probably watch more than I have.
I have, because that's my job during the day. I get to watch sports. It's pretty cool. You guys should try and get on this train. I think the teams that have looked the best are Italy and France, as Coach mentioned. I also think Belgium has a chance now that Kevin De Bruyne is back. Really wide open, though. Italy's issue for once is defense, which has never been the issue for Italy. So, they're scoring like crazy. I still think I like France. I think they've got so much firepower. I just think it's tough to beat them. I would love to see Italy win, given my roots, but I think I got to pick France. That's it. We're done. No more questions.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Special thanks to Bob Thompson for producing a lot of the music that you hear on the show, and thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week or sooner if any news breaks.
Take it from me, Christian Wofford. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
You might get beat today, but each day you got to get better.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. thank you. Good summer, midsummer show.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, what are you guys up to this weekend? Anything fun?
I got a couple family, a family up from Atlanta Sunday and Monday in the Indianapolis area. But other than that, not much.
I honestly have no idea. No, nobody's got anything right now. Although Hannah started conditioning for the high school team. They started that this week. So played in a basketball scrimmage for the high school on Monday. And then last three nights has had conditioning for soccer, but nothing over the weekend. So that's why I don't know what we're doing. Cause that usually defines parameters for which, you know, I can operate on the weekend. So
you're getting old, Andy. You have high school students in the household now.
You're telling me. I know. But yeah, so we'll see what happens. I see the Reds got a win. Bullpen made it interesting as usual, but
yeah, I really appreciate them allowing the Padres to sweep them. That was
Padres. Oh my God.
Padres were reeling and they needed that, man. That was so nice.
Reds bullpen is the cure for what ails you. Well, that's for sure.
Yeah, the Padres were scuffling and they've won. Now they won 7 in a row, I think.
That's the beauty of a 162 game schedule.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to go through a 7-10 game stretch where you're either struggling or the ball's bouncing the wrong way. And then you just got to put more of those good stretches together to get through.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. We went on Saturday. It's amazing to see, you know, every game the Padres are selling out, and that has not been that way for, I mean, it would have been that way last year, obviously, but they were shut down. But
what they do in center field the last couple of years when Petco Park's opened, wasn't it a beach and a hill? And now they closed it off a little bit.
There used to be a beach out there, but they realized that people weren't taking advantage. It was supposed to be for kids to basically play in the sand during the game. But, parents weren't really taking advantage. Parents weren't buying seats out there. Parents were buying seats in the stadium. And so it just was kind of empty. So what they did was they turned that into that whole area into like a party deck area. Mm-hmm. And people also weren't buying the seats above that because they were kind of more bench type seats instead of real seats. But there is a hill behind there. Open. So you can sit on the hill for $5 and watch the game and you take advantage of all the food and all that. Yeah. But you don't have an entrance ticket. You don't have like a ticket to a seat. And there's also a little like mini T-ball field for kids to like play on next to that. But it's cool to sit on that hill, bring a blanket, get a hot dog and watch the game.
They've done some good things out at Petco Park. I believe this was the Major League Park that had an area and a packet for kids with autism and stuff that needed noise reduction headphones and and things like that. And I'm sure other places do as well. I just remember seeing that on a broadcast. I think those kinds of things are really forward thinking to bring fans in that might have difficulty in loud spaces or places like that. I just think that's good. That's just cool stuff.
I will say I don't remember the year the new Padres ownership came on, but I think it was like 2013 or something, maybe 2014. They are a really good ownership group. Like every year they invest in the stadium. Like Petco Park is 17 years old this year and it looks brand new because every year they invest in like renovating one section of the stadium, like one aspect of the stadium, so that it never gets old. And then they move on and do another one and another one and another and then come back around to that other one. I mean, it's fantastic. It's really amazing the way they've, you know,
unlike
sort of changed the mentality here.
Unlike my team, where cup snakes become the very big thing shown on ESPN in the outfield, you know.
Yeah,
I gotta actually, love, you know, Chicago, but sometimes, man, bleachers are nuts.
I wrote an article about that. It was a sign that we were back. America's back, baby.
They had a thousand cup snakes. That's someone pointed out to me. I think a coach I coach with that he was up in Wrigley recently, and they're selling for $12 a pop. He said there had to be 500. Cups in that cup snake, and you charge,
easily.
That's a six.
Well,
grand,
and they're passing them from six every grand, section yeah. over. You know,
that's $6,000 worth of beer that had been consumed in order to build that cup.
Snake, I will say, know? I will say the Cubs ownership doing thing, you know, crying poverty while they're making hundreds of millions of dollars off the team is, it's insane. And the Padres, you know, because I mean, if you're the Cubs, you're printing money. The Red Sox are the same way when the Red Sox started selling some players off and let Mookie Betts walk. And you're just like to say that we don't have enough money is ridiculous. To be in one of those markets and to say we don't have enough money is insane. And the Ricketts family to act like they don't have money. And it's like, you might be struggling with money because you bought a bunch of property around Wrigley that has nothing to do with the baseball team. And you're mad that you didn't make any revenue off for a year. So you're making the baseball team. Just say that. Just say we made some investments that haven't paid off. And so we're struggling. But it's like, there was no reason for them to trade you, Darvish. Like, you know what the Cubs really need right now? Another starting pitcher. Like, you know, and it's like they traded him for a bunch of teenagers. Like, I just.
They're gonna trade two more. Kimbrell's gone.
The
July trade, and I think Bryant's gone before the trade. They almost have to because Kimbrell's a no-brainer. I know it hurts your team, but you can't do the right baseball things anymore. You got to do what's right. You're going to get nothing for him down the road, and then Bryant is going to be a Albert Pujols contract. And I don't know if it's – I know he's good, but I don't know if it, any one person's worth that. But,
yeah.
All right, last question, and I'll let you guys go. This was posed, I think, on ESPN earlier today. Luka?
Trae Young.
Trae Young, Booker, or Donovan Mitchell to start a team?
I think that answer is so easy. But go ahead. You guys go first. I'll give my answer last.
You can go first if you want. Okay. I don't watch a lot of NBA, so I probably am not the most informed on this. I'll give an answer, but I'll see if you can persuade me.
It's Luka. I think he makes people around him better. I think he's an absolute superstar. I think he is within 3 years the best player in the league. He could be next year. You know, he started this year a little bit out of shape, so his numbers weren't great. But if he had gotten a start earlier, he may have won the MVP because I think the Mavericks would have been a little better. I think the team around him doesn't fit him as well as Booker's team does around him and as Trae Young's team does around him. But I would say, yeah, absolutely Luka. And I don't think you can argue me on this. I think he's one of those guys where those guys are all stars. I think Luka's generational. I think Trae Young's a really good player. I do not think the way he plays will hold up forever. I think that Booker is fantastic, but I think that in the end, he's going to be viewed in the same way someone like James Harden is. He's a great scorer, but doesn't do a whole lot else on the court. But I think that Luka, Donovan Mitchell's great. He's really fun to watch. I think he's probably fourth in the pecking order among those guys as far as how long they'll be great. Luka is going to be an all-time great, and I think that he surpasses those other guys because of his ability to do everything on the floor.
I agree. I think the thing that you could argue, if you wanted to argue Trae, is the ability to drop 40 and get double-digit assists. I mean, that's just good basketball. But Luka does that as well. The other guys are scorers. What I like about Luka and Trae is that they're scorers, but they also share the basketball and make other people better. But I could watch any of those four play. I don't watch the NBA much. I'm like Andy. If I got during basketball season, if there's games on these three TVs down here, it's three college games. You know, one from the Colonial, and you know McNeese State is on. I'm watching McNeese State over Utah. In the playoffs, I do watch. I think that's a tough question, but I agree. I think Luka is the one.
I think the other thing with Luka is his size at least gives you flexibility with other things you can do around him. Not only his skill set, right? But he's what, 6'7" ish.
Yeah, Trae Young looks like he's 150 pounds soaking wet. Like it's
and you can because of what Luka can do, you get other options at a true guard spot. You might be able to do something different because he's a good distributor and can do some of those things. So I think he provides you a level of flexibility with who you can surround him with that some of the other guys may not, just because of both their size and some of those kinds of things.
Yeah, what I was going to say about Trae Young is with how small he is, you know, he's slight. He's not just like, you know, right. It's not about height. He's slight. I do think that he will not have and it will not be effective as long as those other guys who are more built because he takes a lot of punishment. He's a human highlight reel. I love watching him play. It's so much fun. But I also think that the thing Luka offers you is if you have a night where you go 0 of 7 from 3 and are, you know, you score 12 points on 30 shots, you know, or 20 shots or whatever, Luka provides you so much else. He rebounds the ball as well as anybody at his position. He's a phenomenal passer. He gives the excitement too. I mean, Luka's going to sell merchandising. He's going to outsell everybody. And he's international as well. If you're looking for financial stuff, you know, for a franchise, I just think that the Mavericks are not constructed well around him. And I think that's what part of the big struggle
is. Is he
demanding
some of those changes, or is that...
You know, I think, well, he demanded that they got to get rid of the guy who was the gambler, who was overreaching, you know, the GM in stuff. I mean, like, they had Seth Curry, who, I mean, Luka, a guy like Luka needs shooters around him. And they had Seth Curry, who's, I think he's third all time in 3-point percentage in the NBA. And you think of Steph as being the great 3-point shooter, but, you know, he's all volume too. So his percentage is going to drop. But Seth Curry is a standing shooter. That's what he does. He runs around, gets open, shoots the way Ray Allen used to. And they traded him away. You know, it's like, that's the exact guy you need around Luka. And they sent him to Philly. And it's, I think that the construction around him needs to be better. And I don't know if he's complaining too much. I would imagine he is. He's gonna sign his extension because it's, you know, he gets what, like $30-something million if he re-signs than if he goes somewhere else at free agency. So yeah, I mean, like, Kristaps Porzingis has a terrible contract that they bought, you know, when he was injured, and now he hasn't returned to the player he used to be. I would be demanding some changes if I was Luka, but I think he wants to play in Dallas. I think he likes, you know, Mark Cuban's ownership and all of that, but he's, you know, he's as good as you're going to get as a prospect for the next couple of years. I think LaMelo Ball is going to be a guy like him who is, you know, can do so many different things on a court that you can start a team around that guy. I mean, just watching him, he's so much fun to watch too. He's got to get bigger. He's got to be a more consistent 3-point shooter, but both of those guys, you put them on the floor and take away one aspect of what they do, and they'll still have a good game. You know, you take away the shooting for a game, you're still going to get assists, you're going to get rebounds, and you're going to get guys who at least are smart enough to occasionally make a play on defense. You take away the rebounding, no rebounds in the game. Well, he's going to score for you, and he's going to pass and find his teammates with incredible vision. I mean, those two guys are guys that I will build a team around for sure.
And the Phoenix has got a 2-point lead early in the third.
Become a huge Suns fan because they're playing the Clippers, but enormous Suns fan right now.
So, all right, gentlemen.
Many Indiana folks are rooting against the Clippers because of Paul George, I'm sure.
As they should.
Yes, exactly.
As
you are
they
not alone.
Should.
You are not alone.
All right, good conversation.
Real shame, those two free throws in that game.
Everyone stay safe. Have fun. Take care of each other. Thanks, Chat Mob, for joining us. We appreciate everyone in the summer, and we're getting closer. To some Indiana football and Indiana basketball, seeing what's going on. I will admit, I did like seeing some of the pictures of Coach Woodson out on the floor coaching.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, I think that's just good to see him out there.
Coach Woodson in his natural element.
Yep. So, all right, everybody.
All right.
Peace out.
See you guys.
Yep, we'll see you.
You're the kind of person who makes a difference at work. So why not work on something that makes a difference? At Zoox, we're looking for collaborative, inquisitive people who can help us achieve our mission. Safer, cleaner, more enjoyable mobility for everyone. Come build the future at Zoox. Find out more at zoox.com/careers.
We could all use a real vacation right about now. Lucky for us, Princess Cruises has a port right here in SF. Starting at $99 per day, Princess can take you to the beaches of Mexico, the tropics of Hawaii, the glaciers of Alaska, or along the California coast. That's right, just $99 per day. Set sail with California's Cruise Line. Call 1-800-PRINCESS, visit princess.com, or contact your travel advisor today. Terms and restrictions apply. Promotional pricing ends November 30th, 2021. Ships are Bermudan and British Registry. Before booking, consult the CDC website at www.cdc.gov.